but you made it easy when you strapped his body to a chair. So say goodbye to everything you ever knew before, and I'd understand if you went running out the door. And I'll keep you safe, and no harm will ever come to you, I swear. And I'll kill if they even dare. I'll kill, I swear.
Mr. Boots.
Hi, Your Highness. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good. I'm doing good, too.
Together, yeah. We are your lowbrow hosts, and we bring you Michigan murders and music, where we discuss murders in our gorgeous state and top it off with a little homegrown music, leaving you with a happy ending and on a good note.
Your Highness.
Lowbrow.
I noticed here that as lowbrow as we are, we have new listeners.
We do.
Mom of four boys.
Jesse.
Cheska M16.
Landon.
Sandra Poe.
Big Guy 1620.
What are these reviews you're talking about here?
We have reviews by Lock Doctor, Polly Pay. Who do you have reviews by?
I've got like Speed 76, Team Court, Nate and Anna, Banana.
Thank you, guys.
I have a sister named Joanna Banana.
She is not named Joanna Banana.
That's her name.
Her name is Joni D.
Joni D. Joni Baloney.
She hates you for that. You know this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, of those people that we forementioned left a review.
I'm sorry, Joni. I know you hate that.
She's going to bring her big ass dog over here and make him drool all over you.
Okay, we have an explicit
content. The aforementioned people left reviews for our podcast, and we appreciate that. We appreciate good reviews, and we appreciate bad reviews.
Of course.
Like lowbrow hosts.
Yeah.
That's not a lie.
I'm okay with that. What we do is very lowbrow.
How many ounces of PBR in front of you?
It's not Leuvenbrau.
Leuvenbrau.
Lowenbrau. Okay, so
he's
yes.
drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon, for fuck's sakes, there,
had
folks.
Had it on my mind.
Hey.
What?
This episode's dedicated to my cousin David.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Rest in peace. I'll see you on the other side, brother. I love you.
We have an explicit content warning.
Oh, I think I already ruined.
Her Highness has and will continue to say naughty words.
Yes.
Words that are offensive to most adults and for sure.
Fuckity.
Not okay for kids.
People don't like the fuck word. I don't
know what you mean. What
is
the fuck
fine.
Word? F?
It's the fucking fuck word.
Oh, that's the F and F word. So anyway, in addition to that, we noticed something on our commute to and from work. If your children are screwing two-by-fours. Did I say tuba-fours?
Tuba-fours.
Tuba-fours. God, I just became my grandparents.
You have a tuba downstairs.
Yeah. That's what a tuba's for.
Yeah.
Anyway, so these kids are screwing two-by-fours into their tree, and they're at least 30 feet up.
Okay,
right now.
Every day that we came home, there would be like two more boards added to this tree,
steps.
And it's like a ladder going up this tree. And Boo, of course, being the 12-year-old that he is, noticed it. It was like,
we did that when we were kids.
And then we finally figured out that they did it to take a branch down because
So it wasn't the kids after all. It was Dad trying to cut his tree down and save a buck.
We do not have insurance, a few thousand bucks.
Yes, it's very expensive.
We do not have insurance for your children.
Don't do it.
Climbing trees in such a manner. My God. But let your kids go out and climb trees, on the other hand. Just, you know, get them dirty. Let them get dirty.
For sure.
That'd be great. We would like to keep our podcast commercial free and independent. So if you guys are feeling a little tipsy, please check out our website. We have merch available. We have the ability to subscribe and donate to us monthly, like Miss Emily Richardson does.
Emily.
She's been doing it for 1 year now.
Dude,
and
it is so greatly appreciated. You have no idea.
I haven't even been on my game for recording. So, Emily, you fucking rock. You can help us out by doing the Tipsy Jar, being a subscriber. You can buy merch. You can share us with your friends. If you would like a sticker, you can email us at michiganmurdersmusic@gmail.com and we'll send you stickers. Boot, who are we featuring this week?
This week we are featuring a pretty cool dude. His name is Shane Tripp with two P's. Tripp.
Yes, sir. A lot of music on Bandcamp he has. If you wouldn't mind, would you throw up your palms?
It's up here.
Rosie.
Look it.
Where are we going? Is that a blister?
That.
Is that a callus? What the? Never mind.
Shut up.
We won't.
It's a blister
that.
And that's a callus. Yeah. Yes, and that's lotion. Jesus. What is wrong with you? So today we're traveling to a city called Flint.
You might have heard about Flint. Things have happened in Flint.
Yeah.
Roger and Me, who was that guy that made that movie documentary? What is that guy's name? I forget it.
I don't remember.
Michael Moore.
Michael Moore. Roger Moore.
And then also there was a major water crisis and probably still is because
international.
I'm sure
news.
They haven't taken care
that
of
that. Makes Michigan
everything.
Look a little bit.
Come on. We're the freshwater state, and we can't give our own people fucking fresh water.
Exactly.
The fucking fuck. So we're going to Flint, Michigan today.
Cherie Paulette Williams, Michigan Department of Corrections number 326122.
Cherie was born October 13, 1971. That
bad
a
year.
Fucking great year. Perfect fucking year. She resides, the Woman's Huron Valley Correctional Facility. She's in jail, boot.
She should be.
She's not in the Woman's
Wait,
Huron
you hear this?
Valley Correctional Facility. There's no stupid, sweet name. It's fucking jail. She's in goddamn jail.
Cherie
was raised in a middle-class neighborhood in the Flint area.
At this time, Flint had the auto factories that would keep people employed and was all around a real bustling area.
Like a million Michigan cities was being supported by our factories, our car automobile factories, you know?
Cherie's childhood wasn't the normal mom and pop type of household. They were separated and Cherie's mom brought plenty of men into and out of their home while she was young.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. Her mother had numerous failed marriages, which kind of explains the numerous men in and out, plus probably men in between the marriages.
Oh, you know it.
I'm just saying. I don't know, but we know.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Cherie has claimed to have been sexually abused as a child around the age of 3 or 4, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if she had. It was way too common. Especially in this kind of
situation. It is way
situation.
Too common, yeah. She graduated from Kinsley High School in 1988 at the age of 17.
She also left her mom's revolving door to start a revolving door of her own.
There's no good answer because some people choose to get out of the house and be different. Unfortunately, it didn't happen in this situation. Cherie left her mom's house but went right into the arms of her first husband. Cherie married for the first time in 1988.
At the age of 27. Yep.
Dang.
If I'm not mistaken, she had...
She would end up married and divorced 2 times by the age of 27.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So she was married right away when she was 17. She moved into a place of her own with her first husband. And then by the time she was 27 years old, she had already been married and divorced 2 times.
Oh, goodness. Okay. So she had 1 kid with first marriage and 2 kids with her second marriage, right?
That's what I could figure out. Cherie would make ends meet by selling Mary Kay. She worked
Have
a few
you ever
jobs
sold Mary
here
Kay?
And there. No, but it's my fucking name.
Eventually, she would take a job at a salvage yard and working for the original 2 owners until it was eventually sold to the man named Bruce.
Bruce, don't bring me down.
Bruce,
don't bring me down.
What is that all about? I never understood that.
It was Electric Light Orchestra.
Yes, it was.
ELO.
While working for Bruce, Cherie convinced him that a computer was a must
for her.
It was needed for the salvage yard business and her Mary Kay business. And computers are a must-have at that point. They're brand new, and you had we just have
the
to
best
have one.
One too with the best modem.
I have to have one. This is in 1996, I think, when she demanded her computer and got it.
All things internet were quite new, and those who had a computer most likely used the interface called AOL.
Dude, I love... Oh, I'm so stupid. Firstly, I love to customize things, so I loved that with AOL you could choose some, you know, Jeff Bridges or whoever the fuck's voice to greet you when you logged on. I thought that was great. And you got the, you've got mail. Which a whole entire stupid movie was made over. AOL days were fucking great. They really were.
She got to work right away at making up a whole new world for herself.
A whole new world.
She headed right for the sex chat rooms.
Wow, chicka, well, well. While Cherie is getting acquainted with numerous men in AOL chat rooms, she's also digging her claws into the new owner of the salvage yard.
Bruce was not... Yes, Bruce.
Bruce.
Bruce was not only a local GM employer, but now the salvage yard owner. He had a good job and a nice home, things that Cherie wanted and did not have for herself.
It's okay that at the time she was 27 and he was 47.
Yeah, it's okay.
I only judge age some of the time.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with really big age differences, and that's just my opinion. And
it just seems weird.
Just how it is.
I don't.
Right around the same time
really
that she moved in with Bruce, Cherie made a little appearance on the good old Montel Williams show.
Fuck okay,
yeah.
This is really weird to me. I'm going off script here.
How dare you?
How does she get away with this kind of shit? I mean, she's traveling across the country to go do a Montel Williams.
Montel might have been in Chicago at that time.
Okay.
There was a lot.
It's not that far of a drive.
Remember, Jenny Jones was in Chicago being taped, and they tape shit today in Chicago all the time. She. Being the attention-seeking whore that she is, you would think her new man, Bruce, would know all about this trip and her thing on the Montel show, but he had no clue that she was going on there.
Because he was a very trusting man. And
poor Bruce.
Because he didn't treat other people like that.
She probably told him she was going to a Mary Kay meeting.
Oh,
I'm going to go earn my pink Cadillac.
Get a Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
On January 27th, 1997, Cherie told Montel all about the abuse that her child had and or was receiving from her ex-husband.
Basically, she was going on there to raise awareness for the state of Michigan because despite her ex-husband's abuse of the child, right, he still had parental visits. And she was hoping to make her voice heard and
well, she
stand
didn't.
Up for her child.
Yeah, this didn't work for her.
In April of 1993, on the 23rd, the two of them, Bruce and Cherie, would take a little trip to Vegas, Las Vegas, Nevada, and they would get married.
Elvis. Yep.
I don't know if it was Elvis, but...
Because you gotta. Right?
I mean, my first marriage was... Fucking Elvis in Vegas. God damn it.
Good for you.
Thanks. Third time's a charm, though.
Oh, speaking of which, Cherie's third marriage and Bruce's fourth marriage. And don't forget the 20-year age gap.
Oh, yeah. Ugh. So Cherie's marriage to Bruce is her third, right? But it's Bruce's fourth marriage?
It seems to be a bit of a bad track record both of them.
I'm just... Red flags.
Hey, you know, hey, do whatever you want. Kill somebody if you want to.
I can't say anything because I'm on my third marriage. Hey. It just seems weird.
You only said second marriage.
No. What?
Yeah.
After the two came home, Cherie spent more and more time on her computer. Every possible minute that she could. In fact, kids went to bed, on the computer. Phone's not ringing, on the computer. Husband's gone, on the computer.
Yeah, so apparently you've had three marriages when you only told me that you had two. She wasn't spending
Keep
this
going.
Time
Would
learning
you?
How to become a self-made Cadillac owner either. She was there to chat.
Sure.
Are we okay? I mean, can we do this for real? Oh,
would you like to dance, sir?
I would, very much
Drink
so.
Drink some of that Pabst
You know, I
bourbon.
Feel a whole lot better about everything.
You also sound like Barry White all of a sudden.
You're a goof.
Cherie was a sex kitten, and internet sex and fantasy was quickly becoming her drug.
Before she had even flown to Las Vegas to say her vows to Bruce, she had begun a rather serious chat history with a man in Reno, Nevada named Jerry Cassidy, a.k.a.
JLC1006. Mm. Screen names, you know. Mm. They're sexy. Mm. Cherie also started spending Bruce's money like she's a fucking GM baby. And I'm not going to lie, I miss GM money.
You were a GM baby.
My mama fucking...
That's why it's so difficult for me.
It really is. My mama, it was nothing to go on a ridiculous shopping spree every weekend.
We did that yesterday and bought some really nice boots. Really nice boots.
Best Doc Martens yesterday. Classic fucking Doc Martens. I cannot wait to wear them in my bed when I'm lying around all the time.
She bought things for
Cherie's
herself.
Cherie's spending that money, right?
Oh, yeah.
What is she doing?
She's buying things for herself and her kids, mostly. Three kids.
There's videotapes of it. I think she's got like that old VHS videotape of her kids and stuff.
She took trips for her business. Why is that in quotes?
Mary Kay.
$46,000 in credit card debt in Jerry's name, thanks to his fifth wife.
Bro, $46,000 she has racked up.
Dude, I would shit my pants. That would be cause.
You're mad at me for the chocolate candle I ordered.
Yes,
as
I am.
A GM baby.
But it smells good.
Thank you. I have never not once gotten a credit card in your name.
Well, thanks to.
Nor have I grabbed any of your credit cards, nor will I ever. $46,000.
Dude, I would absolutely lose my mind. Gone.
This story should be flipped around right here on number 40.
He should have been the one doing the murder.
This story is all wrong from here on out. Damn it.
Cherie, meanwhile, was getting deeper into the online chat world and even beyond by sending some people actual photos.
Yeah, and by then, you had to do it in snail mail form. It wasn't like you were sending it.
Yeah, she sent VHS tape.
Some of it was probably through the AOL stuff, but she was sending VHS.
Can you imagine getting that in the mail? It's like,
you should see some of the sex kitten 80s hair. Beautiful fucking photos that she had. She had the face. And her hair was like. It was, they were hot. You guys should look those videos up.
She didn't even start with the Yahoo pool or, what do you mean?
People in the internet days, like you start with chatting in Yahoo pool, like you go into game rooms. No, she didn't. She was like, I'm not going to any of the game rooms. I'm going right to the sex chat rooms.
She was addicted. She couldn't stop. She spent every second
she could in her life to get her way.
Playing her games with people's lives.
Despite the consequences.
Not even thinking about those consequences.
It's all about her.
Just, oh, for
literally
sure.
All about her. She would later compare it to the thrill of video games. I'm fucking with people's lives. Let's compare it to the video games.
Oh, yes. It's so innocent.
Getting to another level with a man, telling more lies, and getting more love.
You know, I get more fun at the park and ride than that.
No wonder you're always going for bicycle rides. I'm in my underwear.
Shut up.
I'm in my fromundies.
Stop
no,
it.
They're not fromundies. They're called me undies.
They're fromundies. From undies.
It was not too hard to figure out what Cherie wanted when her name popped up in the old AOL chat rooms. She had names such as...
Look at me. I'm sexy.
Sexy kitten for only you.
Just hot to see you.
I love sex so much.
You sound like a cigarette smoking old wench when you talk like that.
Love me slowly.
I want to be laid.
I love sex so much.
Just keep saying that to me.
This
eventually,
is my trophy, Sheila. Have you seen Sheila?
I will get hot.
No, Mom, I'm not shining my... Oh, okay. Those were her screen names, Boot. So I think if a screen name like Just Hot to See You popped up, you kind of know what she's wanting.
She's kind of serious about this game.
Oh, I tell you.
Video game.
It's crazy. Her online affair with JLC1006 was getting pretty hot, heavy, and serious.
3 months after her wedding and honeymoon in Las Vegas, Cherie takes her first trip out to Reno to see Jerry Cassidy, JLC1006.
Also, what's her thing with Nevada people?
I don't know.
There's 50-some other states. Like, bro, reach out. This is AOL. This is AOL. You got the whole world, and you're just going to Nevada.
Right.
By now, Jerry has received numerous, you know, sex kitten-type photos from Cherie.
And VHS tapes.
And fucking VHS tapes.
She had sent him a lovely video of the salvage yard, as you can see or imagine, while saying...
This could all be yours, baby.
it's the American dream.
Her
a
kids
salvage
are
yard.
Like jumping in a trampoline in the background, and one of them's running around in t-shirt and dirty. I think no.
Right?
I think I'd go no, ma'am.
I mean,
there's
other cities that she would fit in quite nicely in Nevada. You remember that high desert area where we dealt with tumbleweeds? And trailer parks, and we really considered moving
let's
there.
Let's move on.
That perump.
Jerry loved this idea. He was happy to be the man for Cherie, to come in and be the father to those three kids. Basically, he was going to be her shining knight.
Jerry told
knight
us...
Knight in shining armor.
Oh.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
A shining knight?
A shining knight. Stars and moons and...
Jerry told his friends
the desert sky.
Where he worked... All about her, and he was truly excited about the prospect of love with Cherie.
I feel bad for Jerry because she's just a sack of lies. There are a gazillion emails, chat logs, and whatever else between the two. One here in Michigan, while the other is out in Reno, Nevada. Their screen names suddenly changed to Cher's Fool and Jer's Fool.
Isn't that so adorable? Oh.
Would you like to dance?
Hey, I'm Jer's Fool.
I'm Cher's Fool.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Ready?
Okay,
yet?
I'm going to light this up then.
Okay. No. Not in this room. Don't. Bitch, I got to work. Like right now.
I've been joking.
I am not kidding. You take that in the other room. If you don't, I'm going to go stand outside. I can work from outside.
You're
just
funny.
Get the long
you
extension
are
cord.
So funny. Listen up, Boo. It goes like this. Put your headphones on and let me tell you a little story about Cherie. Listen.
Do you suffer from a lack of a father figure? Do you have clinical depression? Have you ever accidentally broken your mom's favorite coffee cup, and when she found out you did it, she tied you to a bed and spanked you with a metal spatula?
No.
If you said yes to any of these things,
it wasn't,
I don't care. And to keep it a bean, no one cares.
Daddy issues, I tell ya. What number were we on?
I don't know. I'm stretching and I feel funny.
It's like being at a funeral and you're trying to stop laughing.
Dude, that happened.
Oh, I know. It's happened to me too. It's awful.
You just can't
In
stop.
My defense.
I mean, I was right in
my defense.
Row too.
The old man in front of us farted. And he did not make any response to it at all. And my, like, it didn't happen. And my sister and I about needed to be buried because we couldn't breathe. We almost had to leave the gravesite burial. It was awful and fantastic at the same time.
Well, in my situation, afterwards, some old lady I didn't even know came up to me and she's like, I saw you boys laughing up there. And I thought it was hilarious.
Did she?
Yeah.
Was she like pissed about it?
No,
or was she
not at all.
Kind of cute about
it. She thought it was great.
That's adorable. Well, hey, you can only deal with death in a couple of ways. And drinking isn't a good one to do, so you might as well laugh and fart.
No one wants to be there in the first place.
Oh, Jesus
so.
Christ.
If someone's laughing, okay, good. Good. Yep.
Her trips are either under the guise of girl trips, you know, a fake girl trips. You know all about that, right?
No.
No, no, because she was just so successful at selling her Mary
Maybe
Kay.
Maybe she needed to go out there for Mary Kay business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm
it
sure.
It was one of the two.
Girl
trips, Mary Kay business, trips to Nevada.
Either way, Bruce just trusted her, which is awesome. Can you imagine that? Oh, that'd be awesome. You could get away with anything.
Cherie has made a few trips out to see Jerry, and they are getting a lot more serious. She even tells Jerry that she is pregnant with his child. She's got baby within her.
She goes through all the effort to show him, sending him pictures of the sonogram and stuff like that, photos of her puffing out her little belly to make it look like she was pregnant.
Preggers. Then she starts laying the bricks down. She begins by telling Jerry via text or computer that her husband, Bruce, found out about the pregnancy and beat the shit out of her, causing her to lose the baby.
Jerry was devastated and blatantly angry at Bruce for being a shithole.
Yeah. I mean, Cherie is literally painting Bruce to be a wife-beating asshole.
People believe that shit.
She even took the time to use her Mary Kay Blues eyeshadow kit and bruised her abdomen and arms with the makeup.
Remember when you made my ball sack look like that?
You are supposed to keep that secret, sir.
Okay. It was funny.
She took photos, which we did not do. She took photos and snail mailed them out to Jerry. So she used makeup to make herself look like Bruce beat the shit out of her.
Jerry was an ex-police officer. In fact, he lost his job due to the fact that he told on someone in his department.
Oh, a cop snitch?
Yeah.
Oh, so I bet there's a special name for that.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Crossing that thin blue line or something like that. Cherie knows that she is lighting a moral fuse within him by telling him these lies about her terrible husband.
Ugh. When asked why she wouldn't just leave him and come live with Jerry, she lied to Jerry more, saying seriously ridiculous things about Bruce. Things like, he was in the mafia and still has ties, and we know how that would end. She's basically trying to paint the picture that she's stuck with Bruce or she's going to die.
Very manipulative. I can see where this poor dude would fall into it.
Absolutely.
Bruce has no idea that all of this is going on in his wife's life. She's losing babies and getting beaten by him.
Yeah. She's also going to be rich from a lawsuit, and she owns a bunch of nursing homes. That's what she tells Jerry anyways. None of it's true.
Jerry had moved to Reno from Missouri to get away from his problems, and it worked for quite some time.
Until he answered that message from Sexy Bitch 6969.
Jerry started drinking more after the loss of their first baby, which never existed.
Right. He is in Reno becoming more depressed because the woman he loves and whom supposedly loves him is getting beat and losing his baby in a different state back here in Michigan.
Jerry finally moves into his cousin's basement back in Missouri to kind of help get his poop in a group, get back on
track.
Yeah.
Problem is, Cherie, the poop, is still in his life.
And now she's pregnant with his twins? How? No. Mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she was visiting him. They had sexual intercourse.
But he put it in her butt.
She's pregnant with twins, and Jerry is freaking ecstatic. He's so excited that he's going to have a family. It starts bringing him out of his depression, and his family kind of sees him
his little stupor
improving a little bit.
But then Cherie pulls the cord again. Bruce had
fucking
found out.
Rug right out from under him.
He found out about the pregnancy and the affair, and he's so pissed off. Then, you know,
and she's can't angry talk to him. And she's not allowed to talk to
anymore.
Nobody, not Jerry anymore, because Bruce.
Yep. Jerry doesn't hear from her for a few days, and he starts to get worried, and so he calls the Flint area hospital to see if she's there.
Ugh. Yeah, this is not the days where you could really just tell real quick. Like, on November 5, 1999, Jerry gets an email from BD Junk, which would be Bruce's email from the salvage yard.
The email blathered on about the affair had been discovered and how Bruce was going to make her abort those bastard twins.
Those are my words.
Oh, okay, good.
The harsh. Next day, Jerry gets an email from an unknown sender. And this one is actually from Cherie. And she says that she is going away for a few days and she will contact him next week. It's getting weird.
Mm-hmm. Cherie sends Jerry yet another email during this time saying that Jerry's ex-mafia friends had gang raped her.
She's just egging him on and just pushing his buttons. I don't remember if I mentioned this, but Jerry basically left his police department in his
officiarial duties.
Yeah, because he broke the code of silence. She knows exactly what she's doing. She's pushing his fucking buttons by telling him all this
stuff. And it's working.
So you know what these emails are making his blood boil. He is hearing all about his love, who is pregnant with his twins, getting beat up and gang raped.
By the way, the beating and the gang rape resulted in a miscarriage of the twins.
Of course it did. Yeah. Yep. Cherie. Jerry is now relatively angry. He's already been going through low patches, and Cherie was the light at the end of his tunnel, and that is all going wrong. He's ready to head to Michigan and take care of business.
Oh, he's
going
to do it,
he's
too.
Pissed.
That is when the emails turn from what is happening to Cherie to what they should be doing about it.
Quick turn about face. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm getting beaten up, and I've lost my twins.
You can fix it.
Now what should we do about this?
Oh, we should kill him or something. I don't know.
The emails are a complete roadmap to Bruce's murder that Cherie thought could be erased from the ether world.
Yeah, ether.
Erased from the internet with the click of a delete button. I have written that she had told Jerry that she was forced to get an abortion of the twins. I don't remember which is true. Either way, Jerry is in belief that either she was forced to abort his twins,
well,
or
she's egging
she
him
got
on.
The twins beat out of him.
Either way, she's being a manipulative little bee.
Bastard.
On November 8th, 1999, Cherie had a pizza ordered for dinner that night.
She gave Bruce very specific details on when and where to pick this pizza up.
Bruce never came home with the pizza.
Cherie calls Bruce's brother and her sister-in-law to see if they can run to the salvage yard to check in on him. I think they lived rather close.
Of course, they found him. Sadly, the couple found their brother lying face down in a pool of blood.
Bruce had been shot in the upper chest and neck area with a shotgun. The sister-in-law called 911.
Around 2 a.m., the police showed at Cherie's door with the bad news that her husband had been shot.
Ugh. Cherie pulls out her best acting skills and did a rather good job of grieving appropriately,
whatever that is. As the investigation began, there was no evidence at the crime scene at all.
It's crazy to me. It's always crazy to me when no evidence is found. Cherie was asked if there was problems with anyone, and she admitted that Bruce's employee, John H., owed him money.
So instead of going after the spouse like in every investigation,
90% of the cases,
the police zeroed in on this John dude.
John continually professed his innocence time and time again, interview after interview. His story never fucking wavered.
Because he was telling the truth.
Because he was innocent.
He had nothing to do with any of it.
This part is awful. When John attended the funeral of his friend and boss, Cherie threw a fucking fit. Dude,
she
legitly said, "Mommy and Daddy, get him out of here. That guy murdered my husband, or he murdered my husband." Mommy and Daddy, get him out of here. Just like that, poor John was asked politely by Bruce's brother to leave the funeral of one of his very best friends and said that until this situation was cleared up, he's not wanted around.
Just like every single person who has been named or suspected in a murder, this changed his entire life.
John is the ultimate in what I will call your wrong strength. He just insisted on his innocence. It still stabs him in the heart. You can tell that the poor guy really had a hard time with this. You can see it in his face.
That would age you tremendously. You lose everybody.
Everything.
Yep.
So John actually worked for Bruce at the salvage yard. That's how they knew each other, but they were friends before that. And do you know how much money John owed Bruce?
Because
they said he killed him over money, right? $2,000.
Oh.
And I'm pretty sure that $2,000.
That's
no,
a pittance these days. I mean, I would
it's,
like to have an extra $2,000. But I
at one point, even John's brother pointed the finger at him. But we later find out by John's words that his brother isn't quite right in the head.
Oh, goodness. You mean? Never mind.
He's just not quite right in the head. That's all he said. We're going to leave it at that.
We also find out that at one time, he and Cherie had sex.
Bow chicka.
Apparently, she has had sex with every man
in
the entire county.
You know what? It's okay. Ultimately, it didn't look great for him, but his story never, ever wavered or changed. And he did say, yes, we had sex after my divorce. We had sex a couple times. That was it.
Through the course of the investigation, we found out that Jerry did fail his polygraph, but those are really only about 50%.
Why do we even use those if they're only half accurate?
I think it's a really good intimidation.
It's just like lying to the fucking people that cops can lie to. I hate this. I hate that.
Oh, they know I'm, yeah.
We learned that there is not a single trace of evidence in John's home. No evidence is ever found out. Against John, right?
And he has an alibi.
What the actual fucking fuck? They're still like, you did it.
Uh-huh. The only gun found at John's was a 16-gauge shotgun, and Bruce's murderer used a 20-gauge.
I know all about those gauges. Let me tell you what. Despite all of the...
Yeah, but you don't know about caliber.
Calipers. I know they're used in my car. Despite all... no one damn near take your fender off.
Shut up.
Despite all of the above, he remained a suspect for a long ass time. I'm not even sure how much they were actually looking into Cherie, his new fucking wife, who should be suspect number uno.
Well, she's been doing nefarious things with the detectives at the park and ride. Some time has passed and Jerry's moved back home to Missouri. He moved back there.
We already said that. Sorry.
Jerry has turned back to alcohol. He's lost his love, 3 babies, fictional babies.
Right.
And his career as a police officer, he's not feeling really great
right now. He's fucking
down
in the ditch, and I know how that feels. Jerry sits down in his easy chair and reads a passage from the Bible. "You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment." Matthew 5. Just for clarification,
yes,
he had the Bible open on his lap, and that's what they said he read. I'm wondering if it was underlined.
Oh, right. Maybe a yellow highlighter or something?
Yeah, because if you have a Bible open, there's like 862,000 passages.
Everything's dog-eared
on 2 pages.
I mean, if you're really into it.
It could have been any passage.
Yeah.
So he read his Bible, and then Jerry took his 22 and ended his own life. It's awful.
After Jerry passed.
Thanks to fucking Cherie.
Yeah. After Jerry passed, his family was cleaning out the basement area where he had passed. And under his bed was a briefcase with 3 envelopes addressed on the top. Mom, Brother Mike.
I don't know who the third one is addressed to. I want to say maybe the lawyer. I think he had a sister, too, but I'm not positive. It did say on the top of one of the envelopes, Mike, do not open alone. Contact John O'Connor. And John O'Connor is an attorney, or his attorney. Good. Yeah.
Sadly, due to Jerry's mental state of mind, they had to have a bomb squad open the case just to be safe.
Once the briefcase had been cleared, the family were to read their letters from Jerry in front of the attorney and in front of each other, which I think would be awful.
Oh, yeah. His poor mom not only had to read her dead son's letter, but the disturbing story within the letter.
Ugh. The letter contained a confession and reasoning to why he committed suicide. He told his mom that the day he drove to Flint, he walked into the auto salvage doors, said, "Hi, I'm Jerry," and shot him regarding Bruce.
Needless to say, it was devastating for his mother and his family to read that the reason Jerry took his life was due to Cherie's manipulation.
Suicide already leaves a family with enough questions. Adding Cherie's manipulation made it 18 That's times horrible. Worse. Then they opened the briefcase, and it was a goddamn gold mine of evidence against Cherie. If there's any pot of gold, this is it.
The briefcase contained floppy disks, emails
printed out,
chat logs and printouts,
airline tickets,
and ultrasound photos.
Fucking ultrasound
this
photos.
This is like spy movie stuff, isn't it? It's like straight out of a spy novel.
I bet they were her old ultrasound photos from her kids that she actually had.
Oh, it could be.
Fucking cunt. The briefcase was akin to the little tan envelope during a game of Clue. It contained all of the answers. It was like a scorned lover's last wishes. And I fucking love it.
Yeah,
goddamn minute of it.
He's got her. She's going
fucking
down.
I hate that Jerry committed suicide, but goddamn right he sucked it to her in the end.
The most important document of all would be the detailed plans, a literal guidebook to killing Bruce.
Insanity. On November 7, the beginning of exchanges started between Jerry and Cherie. These exchanges would lead to exact details on when to take Bruce's life.
When officers went to speak with Cherie, guess where she was?
She was in Reno with a brand new lover.
Isn't that nice?
I gotta say that different.
Isn't that exciting?
She was in Reno with a brand new lover.
Oh, that's nice.
So Jerry's not even days, within no time. I don't have the exact timeline, but soon enough that she should not be in fucking Reno with a new person after Jerry just committed suicide and her husband just got murdered.
Well, there's two major victims here.
When officers went to speak with Cherie, guess where she was? She was in Reno with a brand new lover.
Oh, great.
Already. Bruce has died, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry has passed away.
Yep.
And she's already in Reno with a third man before even being able to be questioned by cops about Jerry. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She's already ruined Jerry's life. He has moved back home and yet to kill himself while she is emailing new dudes and traveling out to Reno for more sex. Meanwhile, Jerry literally about to commit suicide due to her ghosting him. Officers await for her arrival back to Michigan and bring her in for questioning.
Cherie is rather cocky and bitchy during the questioning. She's been lying, cheating, manipulating her entire life, and she is not going to change a thing now.
Every question was answered in snide, short comments, and they were loaded with denial.
And she's so narcissistic in her own fantasy world that she knew she could lie and get away with it. That's all she's done her entire life.
Remember? It's just a game, boot.
Yeah. Oh.
She was cuffed and arrested despite her denials. We have the briefcase, bitch. We have the briefcase.
Uh-huh. And a trial started. Cherie was just 28 years old and a mother of three when her trial began.
Basically, she's catfished people. She's catfished these guys over and over again. During trial, there was so much digital evidence against Cherie. It was amazing.
Landlines.
Cell phones.
Emails.
Texts.
Hotel bills.
Oh, check. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. The AOL information.
Oh, yep. You can't dodge any of that stuff.
It was a story of pure manipulation from start to finish. There was so much evidence of Cherie's character right there in black and white, it was difficult to deny.
Do you have a clip of the lawyer on court TV?
Fucking no.
Cherie threw another childish fit, just like she is very capable of doing, just like at Bruce's funeral.
Oh my God. There were so many people dragged into the courtroom to testify thanks to Cherie. We had Charles Miller, Bruce's brother.
Dr. Terry Zanrich.
Detective Sergeant Brian Gillespie.
Roger Cassidy, Jerry's brother.
Dr. Celestine Joseph, OBGYN doctor.
Gloria Taylor.
Carol Slaughter, Jerry's co-worker in Reno.
Mike Cassida, Jerry's brother.
Miss Charlene Cassidy, Jerry's mom.
Sergeant Jeffrey Clark.
Don Colo, an AOL senior manager, was brought in to explain the internet.
Cheryl Wilson, a co-worker.
Carlene Gibbs, co-worker to Jerry.
Laura Ewald, Cherie's best friend.
Jennifer Walters.
Dr. Christina Hansen, mathematician, U of M professor.
Ronald Crichton, firearm specialist.
Detective Sergeant Ives Potorovka.
Detective Sergeant Kevin Shanahan.
Paul L.B., forensic scientist.
Peter Dorr, representative of Bruce.
Ara Varvey.
Anthony Birch.
John Hutchinson.
Harold Hutchinson. Remember those two?
Oh, yeah.
John Hutchinson got blamed for the murder, and Harold Hutchinson isn't quite right in the head, according to his brother, John. And most importantly, Jerry Cassidy's letters were allowed as evidence of a full confession implicating Cherie. Bam.
The closing arguments took forever, but Cherie's lawyer was very suave.
He tried.
Yeah.
He had some good hair going on, too.
Yeah, well.
Prosecution had a rebuttal closing, which I have no idea what that is. Prior to sentencing Cherie, the judge needed to take care of the custody issue of Cherie's two children. I believe her first kid was old enough to be out on its own because she was 17 when she had that kid. So,
Anthony Horton, the two babies' daddy, was there, and the judge stated that the man was working, remarried, and aside from child support rearages, he would be a stable parent for the two kids.
Anthony was happy to take his kids, follow the two orders given by the judge of, one, seeing adult probation people before leaving, two, getting a hold of a friend of the court before leaving Michigan, and taking the children back to his home in Georgia.
You can see the trials on court TV. Filming was so good.
It was so
then.
Good.
Oh, VHS stuff.
There's a couple of times where they went to like scan the courtroom and it was like, bleh. It was so dizzying. It was.
That technology has come a long way in a short period of time.
Judge Judith Fullerton sentenced Cherie Miller to life without parole with credit for 342 days.
Conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree.
Second degree murder with concurrent sentences.
Cherie had her moment to yap her trap, and she said, I did not kill my husband, Bruce Miller, and I did not have someone kill him. I'm maintaining my innocence from here on out.
Okay, Cherie.
She really said, They wrote
story.
That down.
Cherie is cuffed by the bailiff whilst wearing her green jumpsuit and led away from the courtroom. The sweet sound of her feet shackles clinking as she sashayed away.
Wow, that was beautifully written.
Sashayed
away. Your Highness. Cherie continued to claim her innocence, I think, that she had nothing to do with the plan. It was Jerry who was obsessed with her and he wouldn't leave her alone.
Is there anything worse than a dumb narcissist?
Oh, no. It's so
Jesus
frustrating.
Jesus fucking Christ.
God.
Every day.
Oy.
They have to deal with narcissists. Oy. She freaking maxed Bruce's credit cards out, manipulated Jerry to the point of fucking suicide. She started dating another man minutes later, and Jerry's the obsessed one?
Right.
My life.
Yep. Oh, I've seen it. You've seen it.
You know what?
In real life.
She's had her jailhouse epiphany boot.
No good. Cherie has since had her jailhouse epiphany, yep. Apparently. She wants to stop living her life in a fantasy world of lies and manipulation. She wants to be part of her children's lives.
She's behind bars. You kind of, don't you have to live a life of fantasy just to get through it?
I don't know.
I'm just saying. When she was 44 years old, Cherie sent a letter to the judge admitting to her part in the murder plots and plans. Even though back there she said she's maintaining her innocence from here on out.
Because she did this, it gives her no more ability to appeal.
Nope.
To anything.
Also, I call bullshit.
Yep.
Your kids can still come see you. Are you
saying this? She has three hots and a squat. She doesn't care about her kids.
Cherie.
One bit.
Cherie Williams will be available for parole in the year 2055. Another 31 years from this year of our Lord, 2024.
A little something for you here.
Oh, my God.
Cherie.
I forgot about this part. It's been weeks since I wrote this story.
I know. Cherie married again whilst in jail. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. A lovely gentleman saw her story on Snapped, felt some tingles and started writing her.
Why?
And they got married. However, they also divorced.
Love hurts.
What a mess. What is...
Love hurts.
Oh, my God.
So, wait,
God,
that would
people.
Have been Cherie's... Fuck, I lost how many times
I don't know,
she was
eighth,
married.
Ninth?
Not, oh,
teenth.
Man. You guys can see that on Snapped if you look it up.
Like,
you'll
marriage
find
means
it.
Anything to her.
Oh, my God. Now I have told the story, I can go watch all of the true crime things about it because there's a lot of stories. Everybody covered the story, Boot.
2020.
I try not to watch them.
Dateline.
Stop. I try not to watch them until I've done the story because
gotcha.
I don't want it to be.
You don't want it to
be.
Taint?
Yeah.
You.
What else? Inside Edition.
Snapped.
Forensic Files.
Taint. 2020.
Bailey Sarian. Murder, mystery, and makeup. You guys love Bailey Sarian.
Check her out. It's very entertaining.
You know who she is. You ladies know her. She covers the story.
Nice.
It's crazy.
The trial made national headlines due to the newness of the internet and AOL, just so you can find clips of it everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Maybe
they're
with Chocolate Rain
everywhere.
Guy.
The entire court process is also on Court TV's website. Go on there, type her name in, and it will come up. Boo.
Yes.
Who are we?
We're featuring an individual named Shane Tripp.
I reached out to Shane, and he sent us an email with an MP3 included.
Nice. Thank you, Shane.
Freaking awesome. Shane Tripp is a singer-songwriter from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Shane produces a special kind of freak psychedelic folk that really entices the brain and makes it drip. You want to know the name of the song he sent us?
I do.
Crime.
Ah, perfect, Shane. Crime.
You guys, go find Shane's music on Bandcamp. You can buy just a song at a time. You can buy an album. Support the dude. Go follow him on all of the places. I will have it all linked below. Boo, do
yes.
not put yourself in compromising positions.
Yeah, I kind of accidentally did that like 2 days ago at the local grocery store.
And I won't get shot.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of wondering. I got out of there as quickly as I could.
We out. This
Jesus.
Is Shane Tripp Crime.
Escalation. Thank you for choosing Michigan Murders and Music. Please rate the show wherever you listen. Michigan Murders and Music is produced by The Boots. Episodes are researched and written by Your Highness. Edited by Your Highness. Views and opinions are the sole stupidity of us and us alone. Don't blame others, please. Listening to this podcast could quite possibly cause major problems to your earballs and definitely will mess up your kids. Permission has been given to us by the bands, and we purchase our music on Bandcamp.com. Support your local music scene and all local music scenes.